Maybe you step at a time's the best way. Forget about that extra for now. From what the boys tell me, it's pretty hard anymore. Now, I had to also do the tests. I had to do, let me see, Technician Plus, which required 5 words a minute, Morse code, and then I had to do the General, which was a test, and then 13 words a minute, and then I had to do the Advanced, which was the hardest of all the tests, and then I had to do the Extra Class, and it required 20 words a minute. General Class required 13 words a minute Morse code. And it was very, very, very difficult on the Morse code. It's just a matter of persistence and hard work like anything else. And, you know, if you don't have to work for it, like CB, it's not worth having.
My dad would not let me get a CB radio because of the language on there, so got my ham license, and I really do enjoy it, and it's fun to be able to talk to other people, and eventually we'll probably want to learn Morse code. That'll probably be after I get my extra, if when I ever do.
Well, you don't have to wait till then to start learning it, but it's a chore in itself. I'm proud of Chad. He's learning it, and so is Chris. It is something you don't have to learn, but there's hundreds of thousands of people doing it, and it gets through when sideband don't, because it's only 500 hertz wide, and sideband's 2.6 kilohertz. So it's a better form of communication, but there's a lot of people just don't want to do it, and I understand that, and it is a lot of work. And I was a VE for many years, and I've heard every excuse in the world. One guy even told me he had heart trouble, so he couldn't do CW. I've heard them all, you name it. Or it makes me nervous. Well, yeah, I've heard that too. Or I can't hear it. And the idea is it takes elbow grease and time. And if you're not willing to do that, don't do it. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are lots of good contacts on there. Well, Alexander, I gotta pay attention here and back out and go over here for nearer to where my wife is having an exam this afternoon. And been nice talking to you, but you look up that N3FJP logging program, and I guarantee you, you'll love it. I think it's around $50, but Your dad is an extremely wise man, not letting you buy CBs, not in this day and age, and because of the language. He's very, very correct on that. That's why I give it up back in the 70s, because I had 2 girls, my daughters and my wife, and I didn't want that stuff around them. So, Alexander, I'll say 73s and be clear with you. Have a good afternoon. This is N0TR.
Tom, and just to let you know, my dad's also studying for his technician, so hopefully we can hear him on the air shortly, that he's getting close to being ready to pass his test, so I'll let you go. 73 KU4ULP, and I'm clear.
KU4RMM, mobile and listening.
For RMF mobile. This is November 3, Sierra Zulu Portable. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you as well. Are you feeling okay today?
Here is Jim, Juliet, India, Mike. Got this Kenwood THF6 out of the mothballs, where it has been for quite some time, along with my hamming. And just giving it a shot here. Out here about 5 miles south of the airport. And actually, I'm portable right outside my house. Over.
Jim, I'm on my ICOM 2730 Alpha mobile unit. I'm stationary at an outpatient center on 3 St. Francis Drive, West Greenville, Hawaii, as they follow doctor's orders.
2 Charlie.
And this is KO4RMM. My name is Kirk. You quite a bit of static on that last transmission. Go ahead and let's see if you can try again, Jim.
The atmospheric demons are always after me. I'm running a whole 5 watts here behind the brick wall, so I'm going to suggest that probably I'm not getting through very well.
Pretty good this time. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just intermittent spurt of those demons. Maybe they've moved on to somebody else. But yeah, I'm running 50 watts with the ICOM mobile unit. I'm here at St. Francis Outpatient Center, West Greenville.
Last time I was where you are, I was on the receiving end of a colonoscopy, and thankfully, as we say in ham radio, it all came out clear, so it's very nice.
W4DJW. Just so you know, you sound good on the radio. The 5 watt station came in with gangbusters in the beginning, but faded there toward the end. So just letting you know, your station's fine. The 5 watt station started out really good, but he said he brought something out of mothballs. I'm thinking it worked really good at the beginning, but it started to fade really quick. W4DJW.
Status on that W4DJW. This is Kirk, KO4RMM. As I told the 5 watt Jim, he was, the wife gave me permission to play with my mower unit as she went in for her routine follow up doctor's appointment.
So your 50 watts are doing good from there while you're out in the car. I guess you're stationary mobile in the car, but that 50 watts is doing good. You might even be able to turn it down a little bit, but in case that ICOM gets hold, I got an ICOM like that to the 7000, and it gets pretty hot. So just thought that if you could probably back it down a little bit because you're getting in good.
Appreciate that, sir. How's your Christmas season coming out for you so far?
So far, so good. This will be my first non-working Christmas season. And not bad. I kind of like that non-working. That's kind of like a Christmas present all by itself. After 50 years of working, not really retired yet. I got one more year to go. Got till next October before I retire. But I'm acting like I'm retired and I'm having a blast. It's like Christmas every day.
I put in my ticket right at the beginning of October after 13 and a half years, and I'm telling you what, I still feel like this is my first day off.
Well, I'm having a hard time adapting. I got me a 65 Mustang, 64 and a half, 65 Mustang back in 68 or 69. And I was 14 years old. It was my first car. I had my driver's license. You could do that back then at 14. And my mom drove my car home, and it ran out of oil on the way home. And it twisted the drive shaft on the distributor in two. So I had to go to work at 14 with washing dishes for Western Family Steakhouse. And that continued. That work process continued from then until September, this past September. And that was 50 years later. And so after 50 years of working from 14 years old, because you had to get a new engine in your Mustang, which was only a few years old back then, but it was useless. It was broken. to have a useless car was a pain when you're 14 years old. But I learned to work for what I got, and I enjoyed it. That's a way of life. And now here I am, 64 years old, and not working. It's kind of fun. I'm having a good time, but it is an adjustment.
I'm with you on that. I've been working all my life as well, since I was 15, nonstop. So I am a working man. I reckon at the first of the year I'm going to find myself something to do. It is a little strange, but I would be lying if I said I wasn't enjoying it, at least right now. So at lodge meeting last night, people have been asking me how I'm doing, and I said, well, I'm sleeping in a little bit, I'm relaxing, accomplishing some goals, doing some projects, and quite frankly, enjoying life a little bit. That's okay. I got a lot of varied responses from that.
Well, that's the thing. You hit the nail on the head there with going back. And so what I've decided to do is to grow a garden of stocks. And I give them water. I feed them every now and then, and I prune them every now and then. And I feed them every now and then, and I prune them every now and then. And that's my new job. I've made a decision that the stock market's going to be my new boss. I can do a lot better with that. At 64, it's hard to get a new boss. You know what I mean?
What you mean exactly? If you know how to work, you pretty much know how to run yourself, or at least that's the way it should be. Self-discipline is the best gift and the best skill to have. You can have command over yourself and get yourself going and drive yourself toward goals. Subject yourself to an honest evaluation. Keep yourself, you know, in the right lane. The world's your oysters, I tell young people.
That's it. Just check in on the stock garden every now and then. Make sure it doesn't need pruning or watering or feeding, and go about and do what you want to do. I'm having a blast doing it. Flying airplanes, radio controlled airplanes, building airplanes, learning new flight controllers, and learning how they work, and validating that with autonomic flights. Having a blast with doing that. Getting the club secretary, this club, the Briars Club secretary, software back up and running, and getting everybody's ID cards generated, and getting all that stuff going, so that we know what's what. That's part of a hobby. That's fun too. But what I'm not doing is working for somebody else and them getting all the benefit of my work. I've had 50 years of that. I'm over that.
Really so. That's commendable. There's a lot to be said for doing your own thing, and I'm right with you on that. I think it's great that you're into the RC airplanes. I've always been an aviation enthusiast myself. Never done anything on the RC side, you're obviously into enough things to keep you out of trouble from what it sounds like. My wife gives me my to-do list every morning as to where I am to take her, and I enjoy it. I've got a couple of antennas I need to put up. I'm fairly new to this hobby. Got my technicians back in late June, and I'm studying for my general right now. So I'm just benefiting from listening to all you great Elmers coming in through the repeater.
Well, it's good to hear you on the air, and welcome to the amateur radio hobby. I think you're going to like it a lot. The antenna part's a lot of fun. I went through building. I've got, everywhere I go looking for anything, I find an antenna in a box. A wire antenna, a super loop here, a mystery antenna there, a long wire here, a 2 meter, 70 centimeter vertical. It's kind of fun. There's antenna. If you like antennas and antenna tuning and learning antenna theory, you joined the right hobby. Cause it's all about the antenna. It's like my Elmers used to tell me when I first came in, you got $100 to spend $80 on the antenna and $20 on the radio. Because it's all about the antenna. It's not about the amplifier. It's not about the feed line is important if you're going to go a long way away from where you are. But that's one thing, the reason I got into amateur radio. My dad was an amateur radio operator the whole time I was growing up, from before I was born until he died. He was into amateur radio. So I was around it, but I never really got into it. I was flying airplanes. That's my primary hobby. And they require antennas. And nowadays, more than anything, because you have a 5.8 gigahertz video antenna, you got a 2.4 gigahertz command antenna, you've got a 900 megahertz command antenna, and you've got a 70 centimeter telemetry antenna. And you've got them on both ends because they talk back and forth. So it's all about the antenna. Even with radio-controlled airplanes, it's all about radios. I'm having a blast with it.
Well, I'm having a blast listening to you describe it as well. I didn't really have a mentor coming up. I didn't find out about amateur radio until this summer, really. I got into it, and it blew my mind as to all the things you could do with even a technician's license. Of course, I'd fallen victim to the old stereotypes about what amateur radio really was. Just a couple old guys talking to one another about aches and pains, you know. But was I wrong? This is the proverbial 2 foot putt for $1 million to win the tournament. I wish I had somebody telling me about this 25 years ago. All the great things you can do with amateur radio.
Well, you're right. I think we're too busy. I didn't get into it until I was 40. My dad would throw a book at me every now and then and say, here, study this and get your license. Yeah, Dad, I'll do that. Hold your breath. But at 40, it just clicked, and I decided to get into it. I made the decision I was going to do it, and I got into it, and I really wish I would have done it sooner. Like you were saying, it's the same deal. I think we're too busy using what amateur radio operators invented, like your push button on your garage door opener, your remote start, your, the RF signal that is your security signal, the video that's coming, through your doorbell, all of that stuff, the television, all of that stuff originated with amateur radio operators a long, long time ago. So the stereotype that you're saying, yeah, that's probably a really, really poor stereotype. It's, people's everyday lives get totally occupied with what the amateur radio operators invented many, many years ago. Now, we had the opportunity as amateur radio operators to invent the internet, but we let that one slip by us. We probably should have jumped on that one. W4DJW.
This is KO4RMM Kurt, and you were talking about antenna theory earlier. I find myself really getting into that. I find that's a fascinating area of science, and a great body of knowledge supporting that. I'm not exactly into the equations and everything yet, so I have purchased two very similar antennas. One is a 2 meter J-pole copper antenna from Kilo Bravo 9 Bravo Victor Romeo KB9 VBR, something similar to that. He makes antennas. So I bought a 2-meter J-pole that I've got in my backyard just as a proof of concept. It's not very high up. It's about 12 feet off the ground right now, but it's going to go up on the chimney. And then about a month ago, I bought a 70-centimeter Slim Jim from him as well. So both are ready to go up on the chimney right now. I've just got to screw into the brick. I bought some masonry compound to help get the screws seated. So I'm excited to get those run down into the shack.
Well, take some pictures of them before you put them up there. Because a few years from now, you'll wonder, now, what would that look like? And it'll save you a trip up there to the roof. But that's what I do. I get some of the antennas, because I wondered a lot. Okay, does, like building a Yagi, for example, a dipole, not bad, right? A piece of coax with one end, the braid going one way and the center wire going the other way, a quarter wavelength, and boom, you got it. It's pretty simple. But Yagis and whether the elements were attached to the boom and the boom was attached to the center line or versus the braid, the external ground, and where they were attached and if they were in connection with each other or if they were suspended. I didn't know any of that stuff. It's like I have no clue. I could put one together because looking at pictures, but I'd probably short it out or something like that, do something really, really wrong. So I'd go buy one. I'd go buy a 2-meter Yagi, a 5-element 2-meter Yagi. And then I'd inspect it and see, okay, that's how they do that. That was an exploration. That was a fun journey, all right, travel to get it and take it apart and look at it and figure out how it works and then go try to make one. And the thing is about it, which when you're flying RC, they do a lot of really high-frequency stuff. When you buy like a video transmitter, it comes with a really short quarter wavelength, 5.8 gigahertz. It's just a piece of coax with the center wire exposed for a quarter wavelength of 5.8 gigahertz. And it's super simple and it works, but it only goes a little ways. Then they make right-hand circular polarization and left-hand circular polarized antennas, which will go, tens of kilometers, 20, 30, 40, 50 kilometers. And it's no bigger than a silver dollar. And going from something that's the size of your little finger to something that's the size of a little silver dollar makes a difference between making it out, less than a mile to something that'll make it out 20 or 30 miles. It's huge. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot of theory. So a lot of studying to do, but a lot of a lot of benefit can be had. And we're talking quarters of a watt, like a quarter of a watt, a half a watt, three quarters of a watt, going 20 or 30 miles on it. And it's all in that antenna, W4DJW. It's a lot of fun. I have a really good time. It's like a kid on Christmas morning. I have a lot of fun with it.
Amazing. I had no idea that RC planes could be operated at such distances. And then to hear your description of the power that you're getting from such a small apparatus in that antennas, the silver dollar size, your pinky finger size, I thought everything in the RC had to be pretty much within visual contact, but I'll be the first to tell you I'm no expert on RC. I know a couple of people that have done it, but I've never done it myself.
Well, visual contact is a legal requirement in a lot of countries, including the United States, but visual is subjective as well. It's like line of sight, 2 meters. You can go from here to outer space and hit one of the satellites on 2-meter uplink and 70-centimeter downlink, and you're going hundreds of miles, all right, especially when they're on the horizon. So you're going, when you're going straight up, it's just a few, 60 to 200 or 300 miles. When you're going out on the horizon, they can be thousands of miles away. A big, big difference, and that's why the Doppler effect is so important. But that's free space. That's an antenna hanging in free space. The only thing, only atoms out there are oxygen, or not just oxygen, but air molecules. So with radio control airplanes, you can do that. Now, the FAA has some requirements, right, like maximum altitude and that kind of stuff, but they also have the ability to file a flight plan before and get approval. So if you file a flight plan and you get approval for it, then, yeah, you can fly a lot further than you can if you just go out there randomly fly. So there's a lot of learning to be done there, just like there is here in amateur radio. Same thing. But line of sight, a mile or 1,000 miles, all right, doesn't take much power. As long as your line of sight on really high frequencies or, you know, VHF, UHF. Now, HF, that's different because HF, when it hits the ionosphere, it bounces and comes back down to the Earth. It won't go out into outer space. But VHF, they call that a cloud burner. UHF and VHF, those are cloud burners. They burn right through the atmosphere all the way out into outer space. So, yeah, theoretically, you could fly an airplane if you had the power till it was outside of the Earth's atmosphere. But I don't think the FAA would approve your flight plan for that.
For that part, they were talking about how, you know, the Earth satellite to Earth communication is done with the VHF uplink and the UHF down. I'm sorry, the UHF uplink and the VHF downlink. I had it backwards because of the difference in frequency and the wavelengths.
Yeah, that's definitely, I got into that pretty heavy. There's another guy on here, N4DJC. His name is Jerry, if you ever hear him. If you get interested in satellites, he does it. He makes it sound simple. But I wanted to get into it for a long time, but I didn't want to have to hold two radios because you have to have one on uplink and one on downlink. And they can be, you know, 2 meters, 70 centimeters up and down or down and up and forward and backward. It can be 1.3 gigahertz. It can be, you know, there's tons of different frequencies for different satellites. So you just have to look at the satellite and you have to know what that particular satellite is doing. But you have to tune the radio frequency as it's coming over. You have to tune the antenna, its azimuth and elevation, as it's coming over to keep up with it. You need four hands right there. Well, I didn't have four hands. Jerry can do that. He makes compromises and he figures out how that does. I've watched YouTube videos of other people that can do that. They have this thing they mount on their chest and it'll have two radios on their chest. And they've got earplugs in and I guess they're listening and they're talking. It's just, and you only get 15 minutes. This isn't like you can just sit here for hours and call CQ. You get a 15-minute path that comes over, the satellite comes over your head. It's got a big footprint, a shadow that it casts on the Earth's surface. And as the Earth is rotating, and it is rotating, that shadow comes across the Earth. And when that shadow, when you're in that shadow, you can talk to it. When you're not in that shadow, there's no talking to it. But when it first comes up to you, it's right on the horizon. And then when it's right overhead, well, sometimes it doesn't even come overhead. Sometimes it comes over at an angle. So you just make an arc, kind of like the sun does in, you know, the wintertime. It only arcs over just a little bit. It doesn't come directly up overhead. But anyway, if you decide to get into that a lot, listen for N4DJC Jerry, because he's really up on that stuff.
And that's just one of the many things I've read about, you know, in amateur radio, the ability to bounce signals off or listen to and bounce signals off of your satellite or satellites, the International Space Station. You've got Earth, Moon, Earth bounce, which is something I would love to at least look at as well. My fraternity brother has actually been in amateur radio less time than I have, but he's already got his amateur extra. It's like I'd set a big lighter to rocket fuel for him. I was already just had gotten my technician license, and I said, "Hey, John, you need to look at doing this." He's got an engineering degree from Auburn, and his dad was a big ham radio guy, but he never really got into it. When I started telling him of all the niches and things you can do with an amateur license, he blew my doors off, and now he's sending me graphs of tropospheric propagation and Keplerian data. And he's, you mentioned antenna science. He's very much into antenna science. He's building antennas as we speak. So at least I can say that I preached the amateur radio gospel to one person that you know, took off with it.
W4DJW. Well, that's good. You got an early start. You're going to fit right in because it's so much fun. You'll hear a lot of amateur radio operators wanting to get other people to get started into it and just wanting them to know, like I'm doing with you now. But it sounds like you're already there. There is Earth, Moon, Earth, which you were mentioning a minute ago, is there have been a few guys around this area that have done that. One of them moved to Tennessee not too long ago, but he did it. He was a UHF, worked all countries, one of the few people on 70 centimeters that was able to work. He had almost all the countries on Earth. And that's a huge accomplishment for UHF, right? That's up in the 70 centimeter range. But he did Earth, Moon, Earth, and he did it with an array of Yagis pointed and using legal limit on UHF, which that's dangerous. That you can cook food on that RF, right, in no time. But but he did it. And there's another guy that was 100 years old in 6 months. He passed away not too long ago. He's a silent key now. And he's selling all of it. He's not selling it. He's he gave all of his equipment to the club to put it up for auction. And he did Earth, Moon, Earth. He was a sound engineer, really good. You know, he's a guy that was really into, I mean, he did it for a living. He did what we do for fun. He did that for a living. So he was really, really good and had been doing it for 100 years. And he just recently passed away. So you're going to see some of that stuff come up on the SwapNet. On Wednesday night, we have a SwapNet here. We have a net every single night. We have a SwapNet every Wednesday night. And once we get a place to store all his equipment, he had so much, we're having to make room for storage for his equipment. And you'll probably want to look through there if you're interested in Earth, Moon, Earth, because I was looking at his antennas, the way that he did that, and his tripods and stuff like that, really, really heavy-duty tripods. And that he used to get into it. It was interesting. But a lot of that equipment will be coming up for sale. And it, you know, when you do older equipment like that, you can get it for a song compared to what it cost when it came out. So just, you know, a few people that do that, that's hard stuff though. Earth, Moon, Earth, that's hard work. you really got to be dedicated to do that. W4DJW.
Go4RMM with, KJ4DJW. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to meet that fella. But yeah, I'm familiar with the 9 p.m. net. I haven't been on it in a couple weeks. Maybe this is the sign that I was looking for to get back into it. And I am looking for my base station. For my shack, which I got the antennas before I got the radio, so I don't even have a base station yet. That's why I like to run errands so much now with the ICOM. But I'd be definitely interested in to see if I can get a decent base station at a decent price. That's my priority now. So I've got a couple of copper antennas to get on my roof. I've got a long wire already up there. Through my backyard. I've got a decent HF shortwave radio hooked up to the NFED. So I've got some projects sitting out there that I need to, that are, you know, only got three different projects that are partially complete.
Well, sounds like you're getting yourself set up and you've got a lot of patience. That's good. Yeah, it gives you time to get the stuff that you want. Starting with the antenna is the right way to do it. Talking about liking to run errands because it gets you in the car. My wife asks me why I don't ever take her car to go anywhere. Sometimes it's parked behind, and I have to move hers to get mine out. And or we'll go down to her parents' house down in Florida, down in Fort Myers, and she'll say, why can't we take my car? Because her car rides a lot nicer than my car does. And I'll tell her, because your car doesn't have a radio. You can't drive a car. I can't drive a car if it doesn't have a ham radio in it. I mean, that's just something to do. That's just extremely wasteful. right? You're in a car, you're moving around, and the car doesn't have a ham radio. What's the point?
I wish you could see my face when you're talking, because I'm really breaking up here and laughing, because, you know, I'm exactly the same way now. I never listen to the AM, FM radio in the car anymore. It just takes up space. Well, quite frankly, I haven't for a long years now because of the ads. They drive me nuts. But, yes, the ham radio is the star of the show, and it has totally transformed, you know, my perception of running errands and being out and about. So, that has been a very positive development in my life to have this mobile rig put in. And by the way, this is where I need to give a good plug to KO4NUE Chad out there. He's the one that installed it for me, so I owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude.
Well, he's kind of, I don't know if you remember a long, long time ago, or how old you are, or a long, long time ago when Star Wars first came out, they had Chewbacca and the guy that was the piloting the starship who they went to warp drive for the first time. And they hit the warp button, and all the stars went like a streak, went past you. Well, that's the way Chad came into ham radio. He came in at light speed, man. He's really jumped up there. He went from zero to Mach 7, right, in just a few seconds. But he has done a good job. It's a lot to do. But he's retired, too. You got to keep that in mind, right? He doesn't have a real job that he has to. But the ex-wife, the wife giving you the instructions. Mine started off in September doing that with me as well. And I went along with it for the first couple of months. And then afterwards I said, now, wait a minute. I've got to get some stuff I want to get done too. So she didn't like that. She got a frown on her face, but she understands. I still get her honeydews done, but not quite as fast as I did when I was first coming out of the gate. But yeah, Chad's a good guy. He's learned antennas too. He's a lot focused on the VHF antennas, and we'll go from there, I'm sure. Anyway, I got to get back to what I was doing, writing some software for the club secretary stuff. I'm testing it, getting club ID cards and all that stuff with QR codes, scan codes on the cards, so that you can scan it and it'll take you to our club site, stuff like that. And it's a lot of fun, too. I enjoy doing the work I used to do when I used to work for somebody else, but now I'm doing it for myself, and it's a whole lot more fun. Anyway, Kurt, it's been nice to meet you. I won't tie you up any longer, but take care. Hope to hear you on the net on the evenings coming up in the near term. More the merrier. KO4RRM, W4DJW.
For DJW KO4RMM, copy there. You need to get back to your project, sound like. Not at all. You don't hold me up one bit. I thoroughly enjoyed the QSO and get a chance to chat with you. I'm very familiar with your voice. I've been listening to you for several months now. And I think it's time I joined the club. You wouldn't mind telling me how much dues are. For me, maybe to put an application in.
Yeah, it's different prices for different age. If you're over 65, I think. Let me pull that up. I just added that to the program here 2 days ago, so I ought to know it by heart. But they changed it from the last time when I was doing it. So it is full membership is $25 for a year. Over 65 is $20 for a year. Additional family members are $15 a piece. Now I got to go back to another desktop and find my transmit button. Does that answer the question? Oh, yeah, you can do that on the website. BRARS.cc is the website. Blue Ridge Amateur Radio Society.cc. BRARS.cc.
Thank you for that information. And yes, that thoroughly answered my question. I'll be getting on the website when I get back back home from the errands out here, and look forward to meeting you and all the other great members there at the Blue Ridge Club. And I love the repeater. I've been enjoying the repeater for a good while now. I esteem it to be probably the best 2-meter repeater I've heard, and this goes back to earlier, much earlier this year, when all I had was a scanner. It seemed like 146 610 was the best station I could pick up, and so a lot of the voices are familiar. It's just since June I've been able to press the button. So I'll let you get back to what you're doing. KO4RMM, mobile, stationary mobile.
All right, Kurt. And yeah, we might be able to see each other eyeball to eyeball in the not too distant future. The club is used to do many field days. We used to have a lot of events, right? And many field days was probably my favorite, where the ARRL has a yearly field day. That's one time a year where you go 24 hours from like 2 o'clock to 2 o'clock on Saturday to 2 o'clock on Sunday. And everybody in the United States does it. All the ham radio operators are out at field day, so you make hundreds and hundreds of contacts, and it's a lot of fun. But we also did, our club did many field days where we just go out and set up and communicate. We'd set up 3 or 4 different stations. We'd have tents. We'd camp out overnight. We'd have cookout. You know, it's kind of fun when you're outside there in the UV rays. COVID doesn't have quite the stranglehold on you as it does if you're inside a building, inside a room, rebreathing the same air as the same people. So outside and about, I think we'll get to do that. Plus the ham fest, right, where there's a boneyard and stuff like that. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to meeting you. Take care. KO4RMM, W4DJW.
4DJW, KN4BWA.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, 2 p.m. is what I'm shooting for, but it might be 2:15, 2:20.
Tomorrow or Friday or both, depending on the weather. Yeah, I don't know what time I'll be there exactly. I don't charge anything till a few hours before, because otherwise I'm just discharging. That just uses up the life of the battery, so I wait till the last minute to charge. But yeah, if the weather looks good, 2 o'clock tomorrow and Friday.
The weatherman's going to be wrong about the wind, and it's just going to be nice.
All right, I can't get back to work. I've been lollygagging for the last 30, 45 minutes. So I'm cracking the whip against myself here again to get back to work. I'm having a lot of fun programming. I'm kind of glad I took the secretary position and brought the software back up to speed. I haven't been programming to this extent in C++ in 6 or 7 years. And I'm having a blast. This is as much fun as flying with goggles on.
Get you out more. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. But anyhow, I'll let you get back at it. 73 is KN4BWA clear.
All right, catch you later. W4DJW clear.
4CBA mobile.
Oh, KN4BWA.
So, Dave was talking about flying with goggles. Do you know why the open cockpit pilots wore scars around their necks?
Gallant.
I guess it added a bit of flair, but it was a functional reason. The in an open cockpit, you know, it's like riding a motorcycle. Your collar, you know, is flapping in the wind and it chafes your neck, so they would wrap that around their neck to keep it from chafing in the wind, you know.
Well, I always heard that during the early days of flight, those engines would spit and sputter and leak a little bit of oil, and they used their scarves also to clear their goggles.
A twofold purpose. Yeah, I'm sure. It probably wasn't. If it wasn't for the engines and the bugs and everything else you'd run into, because I know riding down the road on a motorcycle, I've had bugs hit me in the face and in the legs and everywhere else.
story?
In a drive-thru, so I'm kind of stuck.
Back in the day, back in 1974, I'm sitting on a Honda 750 four-cylinder. I pull off of Pleasantburg onto Pelham Road, east-north, and then I take that right fork up to go up Pelham Road. And I pull out from that fork, and I'm hitting it pretty good, and I get about the second gear, and I'm winding it up. And I had a helmet on, but no face shield, just sunglasses. And I felt thump right up the side of my head. And I felt this thing kind of gnarling around on the side of my head. And I pulled over real quick, throwed that helmet off. And you know what I caught? A big old carpenter bee right between the helmet and the side of my head.
That would have freaked me out there. I don't like bees. I had one bee, I can't remember what kind it was, get between my face shield and my face, and I think I flipped my face shield up and was able to get rid of it, but oh man, something like that can make you have a wreck. I had a dog, our last dog, she didn't like bumblebees, and for some reason they would fly around her when she went outside and just bug her sometimes, and she would snap at them. She actually ate one, and I expected it to sting her, but evidently it didn't, but she ate it and swallowed it.
Bite bees like that, and they regretted it, but, wow.
I can remember back in the good old days, I won't say what year it was, but it wasn't in this century, and my grandmother had a couple of fig trees, and we would go and I'd see a nice ripe fig, and I loved eating figs in the summer there, and what I didn't know was wasp like figs too, and there'd be a dang wasp on the backside of it eating, and I wouldn't see it, and I'd reach up there and grab that fig and get stung by a wasp. I don't know how many times that happened.
Competition. They'll beat you out every time.
Is, you know, I never learned to look before I, you know, just reach up there. I guess it was just a natural thing, you know, just to reach up there and get and pick it, because it was right at my eye level at that time. I was just a kid, and it was a big tree, and so anyway, it's kind of different. So what are you up to today?
I'm headed back to the house to take care of an errand or two. But right now I'm getting ready to fuss about W4NGU. Phil, he put me onto those daggone soft serve cones, ice cream cones at QT. They taste just like what used to be coming out of the Dairy Queens back in the day, years ago. And I've become addicted to them. And it's all his fault. I hope you're listening in, Bill.
Put a Baofeng on his desk and monitors his frequency, so he probably just can't respond. So we can sit and talk about him. But, yeah, that, I tell you, soft serve ice cream, man, I that's one of the things I miss. Since I went on my Atkins diet, and it just, or I should say my lifestyle change. But anyway, that's just the way it goes, and I guess the rewards are greater than the need to eat soft serve ice cream.
That's awesome. serve ice cream because chivalry is good. Yeah, and it's all Phil's fault. Thank you, W4AGU.
Taking my seat in case he wanted to jump in there. Well, yeah, he put a gun to your head, didn't he, and said you're going to eat this or die. So, anyway, let me teach you this new word. It's called choice. Yeah, you have a choice. Oh, me. Well, I'm pulling up to the Wendy here. I'll be back in a minute.
K4BWA, standing by.
N4WRO.
Bill, I know I've succumbed to the ice cream cone.
Well, believe it or not, my grandfather, when you said Dairy Queen, my grandfather owned three of them years ago. He was like the fifth or the sixth franchise store to open up in the U.S.
No kidding. That's cool. Where did he have them at?
Up in East St. Louis, Illinois. I worked there all my high school years.
That's on the east side of the river, isn't it?
Yep. Hey, while I got you here, I heard you mention the other day that you had two MFJ switches that were mighty fine junk. What was wrong with them, and what model were they?
It was a six-way switch. And basically what was wrong was is I would get a rattly static on my carrier, okay? And what I diagnosed the problem to be was is they are a mechanical switch. It's not an electronic switch. And as you rotate it around, the contacts would come up and just barely make. So it sounded fine when you received, but the moment you put a little bit of power on there, then it would just go to pieces. So, you know, that's just poor quality.
Yeah. Was that on HF or UHF, VHF?
Is it all of the above, boss?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm looking for a little two position to use on this UHF VHF swap between rigs. And a good friend of mine recommended the MFJ to 170-something C model. It's the heavy duty one. I was looking at the Alpha Deltas, but nobody's got those. Contact.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Alpha Delta is what you want. I don't know if they're just out of stock right now. I've got a two-way switch. If you contact me, I'd probably let you have it if you want to drive up and get it. ND7J Mobile. It's a good switch, too. It's along the lines of an Alpha Delta.
Is it an Alpha Delta, Bob?
Delta. I have all Alpha Deltas in my shack. This one is not an Alpha Delta, but it is a very high-quality Alpha Delta type. It's a good switch. I don't buy junk. It's a good switch.
Well, just a quick comment. What do you think about the MFJ switches?
They're for display purposes only. I guess they're all right.
You caught that, didn't you, Bill?
Yeah. No, I'm in agreement with Bob. The Alpha Delta is the way to go. It's just nobody's got them right now. But I'm not in a big hurry.
Two-way switch that I'm not using, and if you need it, you can have it. You just got to drive up and get it.
Okay, Bob, let me think about that. I got all your info. I just pulled you up here. So, like I said, I'm in no big hurry. It's just an idea I've been toying around with here to move some stuff around in the shack.
It's out in my building, and it's available if you need it. So, anyway, what are you up to, Steve? No good? I heard you talking about high school. I didn't know you went.
Ooh.
Oh, Bob, I just love you too, brother. Man, I tell you what. Now, I was referencing W4NGU, Phil, and how I feel about my little buddy right these days. because he's the one that put me onto these soft serve ice cream cones at the QT stations. They taste just like what they used to at the Dairy Queens back in the day. And they're good, and they're just, ooh. It's almost as bad as the hot now sign. My truck just automatically turns in, or I try to stop it from turning in when the hot now sign is on. I see a QT station, I want to stop and get that ice cream. And it's all Bill's fault.